Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. This is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Toldot. We at the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, our faculty and staff in Israel and in North America, join with our brothers and sisters around the world in mourning the horrific loss of life at the Tree of Life congregation in Pittsburgh on Shabbat morning a little over a week ago. Our hearts go out to our dear friends in Pittsburgh, an extraordinary Jewish community with a vibrant religious and cultural life. Moments like this remind us of the bonds of connection that unite Jews everywhere with one another. We mourn with our friends in Pittsburgh, our alumni, supporters, Kulam Beit Midrash participants and friends, and pray that they and all of us experience strength and resilience, courage and comfort in the days and weeks ahead. We pray for those who are injured, and together with our friends in Pittsburgh, we are heartened by the outpouring of love and support that they are experiencing from near and far. May the day come soon when Torah and all it represents will be a tree of life to those that hold fast to it. This week, Toldot with Yiscah Smith. Yiscah Smith is an adjunct faculty member at Pardes. And now, Yiscah Smith.
Parshat Toldot, cultivating the practice of spiritual conflict resolution within, between our inner Yaakov and our inner Esav, and reaching harmony through compassion, gentleness, and trust. In the beginning of this week's parsha, in Genesis 25, verses 21 through 23, we read, "And Yitzchak entreated the Lord on behalf of his wife, because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated by him, and Rivkah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled with each other within her. And she said, 'This being so, why am I thus?' And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, 'Shnei goyim bevitnech, two nations are in your womb, and two peoples shall be separated from within you. One people will be stronger than the other people. One nation shall prevail over the other nation. Ulaom melaom ye'ematz. And the elder shall serve the younger. V'rav ye'avod tza'ir.'" Shortly afterwards, Rivkah gives birth, first to Esav and then to Yaakov, and hence the ongoing sibling rivalry between Esav and Yaakov that began in their mother's womb continues. The Baal HaTanya, Rabbi Shneur Zalman of La'adi, the first Lubavitcher Chabad Rebbe, who passed in 1812, explores this account in his magnum opus, Tanya, published in 1796. In chapter 9, he addresses the spiritual and deeper meaning of this account and suggests how this interpretation can be relied upon as an inspiring, actually unifying and powerful resource in our spiritual practice. The Baal HaTanya teaches that the phrase, "Ulaom melaom ye'ematz," one nation shall prevail over the other nation. One people will be stronger than the other people, refers not only to the actual ever-present conflict between Yaakov and Esav, but to another ongoing conflict as well. The Baal HaTanya's following teaching is based on what many consider to be one of the most important chidushim, innovations of the Tanya. He draws on a wide selection of sources from Tanakh, Gemara, the Zohar, Kabbalah, as he conceives of the human soul as actually consisting of two distinct souls. In terms of a Jew's spiritual life, the above account of rivalry between Yaakov and Esav is an allusion to what he refers to as the divine soul, Hanefesh Elokit, and the vitalizing animal soul, Hanefesh Chiyonit HaBehemit, respectively. These two souls, consciousness centers, if you may, the former being the Yaakov within us, the Nefesh Elokit, and the latter being the Esav within us, HaNefesh HaChiyonit HaBehemit, are constantly at strife with each other. And I ask, for what purpose? What are they always at war about? In Kohelet, in Ecclesiastes 9:14, which is then expanded upon in Masechet Nedarim 32b, the body is referred to as, quote, a small city, Ir Ketana. The Baal HaTanya believes that the two souls, these two energy centers, in relation to one's body, are just as two kings who wage war over a city. What does each king wish? Each king wishes to capture the small city and rule over its inhabitants entirely. Each of the two souls continuously wages war against the other in the attempt to conquer the body. Each one wants to direct the body according to its particular will, exercising its hopeful domain over thought, speech, and deed. To further understand the depth and impact of this innovative interpretation of the account of conflict between Yaakov and Esav, I would like to share Rav Adin Steinsaltz's commentary on this piece of Tanya in his book, Opening the Tanya, published in 2003. Rav Steinsaltz, referring to this inner conflict, suggests the following, quote, "In a sense, this really applies to every Jew, at any time. Every person, in fact, senses that there are, quote, two children struggling within oneself. A person has within oneself not a single personality, but two nations, two personalities, each striving in a different direction, and frequently in opposition to one another. The problem is that neither personality is content with concerning itself with its own affairs. Each is constantly attempting to encroach upon the domain of the other. Furthermore, the relationship between them is such that ulaom mulaom ye'amatz. One nation will always strengthen itself over the other, meaning any increase in strength of one side produces a reaction that increases the strength of the other to challenge its opponent. Rav Steinsaltz continues, "The result is the extreme, agonizing spiritual upheavals that virtually every soul must contend with. A person attains a certain level of goodness or holiness, and at that very point, when we're ready to celebrate, when the person is anticipating a holy experience and a spiritual elevation, one experiences something that is could be the very opposite. Where did that come from? The person was involved in a holy pursuit. He truly was in a holy place when suddenly a thought invades his mind or a desire erupts in his heart that has no relation to the holy world in which he had been. Something that expresses even possibly the lowest and basest side of his personality. At such moments, a person tends to see himself as even more base and lowly. It is therefore important," Rav Steinsaltz concludes in his commentary, "that a person understands what really is transpiring within oneself. The person should understand that there are two nations in your womb, Shnei Goyim Bevetnech, and that nation over nations shall strengthen itself, Ulaom Malaom Ye'amatz. That a person is not one, but two, and that when one becomes stronger, the other rallies strength in response. It is important for us to know that life is not, as we wish it would be, a smooth and straight progression, and that one needs to really, to mamash, be prepared for sudden bursts of energy from one side or the other. We see then that we possess one soul that is characterized by the instinct, with how I understand it, it's the instinct to survive. This is the physical side to our lives, the Esav in us, Ish Yodei Tzayid, Ish Sadeh, the part of us that knows how to hunt, how to capture out there in the world, how to mark our place, the part of us that's in the physical world, the person of the field. From this place, we may resort to fear-based behavior or pleasure-seeking behavior at any and at all costs. For many, the strong drive to exist, to survive, to make it, to live in this world with all of the many incessant demands, becomes an insurmountable, or what appears to be an insurmountable and formidable opponent to defeat. Albeit that it represents the finite and limited part of ourselves. Likewise, though, we possess a second soul that is characterized, by how I understand it, the inner calling to reach beyond survival. This is the spiritual side to our lives, the Yaakov in us, the Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim, the wholesome part of us who dwells in the tents, meaning in this place of serenity, we were experiencing something of touching that which is beyond ourselves, our spiritual center. It's the ego. We have the ego, and then this is the beyond ego space. From this place, from the Ish Tam Yoshev Ohalim, we pursue the quest for meaning, where we are driven, we're mamash driven to search for a life punctuated by devotion to an idea or to a belief greater than our limited selves, driven to stretch farther than survival, driven to move past our limited ego and to attach our lives to the infinite that lies in the yet-to-be-experienced unknown. Neither soul embodies nor defines good and evil. They each are God-created, God-bestowed, and God-appointed centers of consciousness that require, in one way or another, our attention. So I ask then, can this ongoing, ever-present conflict between these two internal powerful forces ever be resolved? Is the Baal HaTanya suggesting that we are forever destined and doomed to live in a sort of spiritually charged existential crisis, marked by this ongoing inner turmoil? I believe that the answer is both yes and no, really depending on how we engage, or even more importantly, embrace this struggle as a struggle intrinsic to the human experience. In fact, there can be resolution, and with cultivating the necessary spiritual practice, we may very well experience the inner peace, the tranquility and quietude that resolution brings, that we all deep inside seek and wish and pray for, without chevra, without having to destroy or annihilate violently an essential part of what makes each one of us who we are. Actually, the end of the verse alludes to this inner, peaceful, what I would call spiritual conflict resolution. And the elder shall serve the younger. V'rov ya'avod tza'ir. In fact, the Baal HaTanya himself, in chapter 27, suggests one way of going into battle and attaining victory. He employs the Aramaic Kabbalistic terms, et kafya and et hafcha, to subdue and then to transform. When our spiritual center is challenged by our earthly center, we need to remain strong and not allow ourselves to be easily swayed into compromising our core authentic selves, our integrity, and our self-respect for a temporary moment of whatever it is that the earthly bounds and base soul within us may be seeking. Once we overcome this strong, earthly bound, physically defined pull that the animal soul exerts over us, then, Chevra, we can actually transform whatever the physical side to ourselves is suggesting, sometimes by doing, sometimes by restraining, sometimes with softness, with gentleness, with honor. We can actually transform. This is mamash. This is what the Bala Tanya believes to be the ultimate. It's just not a matter of the it kafya to subdue, but it really is to transform and to use it. This, of course, is a podcast or two or many, a podcast in of itself. However, what the Bala Tanya implores us to do, rather than flee from the physical side of our lives due to fear that we may become entangled and confused, is to first acknowledge and then quiet down its urgings. Hear the urgings, honor the urgings, and then subdue them, and then transform them. And how do we do that? By employing the actual physical part of our lives in manifesting our spiritual side. For example, eating. What could be more earthly bound? What voice speaks louder from the Nefesh Behemit, this animal vitalizing soul, than I am hungry? And yet, there's a way to subdue its loudness, its sense of immediacy. And then after we subdue that and quiet it down, then we can transform it into eating a certain way, which then acknowledges our godly soul. Giving meaning and providing structure in how we engage with the physical world enhances our very own devotion to our spiritual center. By gently honoring and harnessing one part of ourselves rather than trying to viciously destroy it, we are able to bring harmony and integration, a shiluv, to not only our inner selves, but to the world at large. Rav Kook enhances the need to both acknowledge and prioritize these two forces when he teaches the following from Shmona Kavatzim, File 4, Teaching 28. He teaches as follows. Just as a person needs to adjust to the natural forces inherent in the physical world, one learns its ways and actions of these natural forces according to the general rules that govern the world. Why? Because the person himself is also a part of them, meaning these natural forces, and they rule within him as they rule outside of him. Likewise, and even more so, one must adjust to the natural laws inherent in the spiritual world, for they govern even more over all of existence, and the person is a part of them, meaning these natural forces inherent in the spiritual world, and they rule even more within all of him. So from beginning to end, this adjustment, this adaptation, is the supreme point, Rav Kook believes, of attaching oneself to godliness in all its ways and deeds. So it incorporates both worlds in all of its feelings and thoughts. For this adjustment to the existence of spirituality includes everything, meaning also physicality. And from it, this existence, everything flows. I believe that what Rav Kook is suggesting is in fact realizing and manifesting in our spiritual practice the end of the verse quoted above. That the Rav, that the elder, Ya'avot Seir, will in fact be in service to the younger. That the Esav will be in service to the Yaakov. In the words of the Torah, Rav Kook is reinforcing the secret in how to bring about resolution. The elder being Esav and the younger being Yaakov can in fact reach a place of harmony. Again, it's not about avoidance, destroying, or fleeing. This practice requires the need to recognize both parts of ourselves, honoring them, and then prioritizing one over the other. My final source in this discussion is found in the P.S.S.'s introduction to B'nai Machshava Tova, referred to as Conscious Community, written in 1927 in Poland. Here, the P.S.S.'s, also known as the Eish Kodesh, explains his purpose for organizing a select group of spiritually sensitive individuals. He writes as follows, "The goal of our association is..." Our goal, he writes, is exactly the same as the hope and aspiration of every single Jew. We wish to be in relationship with God. We wish to serve God. We wish to be devoted to the relationship. The God of Abraham, the God of Yitzchak, and the God of Yaakov, the God of Sarah, the God of Rivka, the God of Rachel and Leah. Our goal is to be thoroughly devoted to God with our entire being, so that every capacity of our bodies and every spark of our souls is connected with the holiness of God, which permeates us and surrounds us. So he says then, our merciful Father, Ava Rachaman, has already stirred our hearts and implanted within us this innate, deep desire to be in relationship with him. We sense that we cannot be completely dominated by the physical mundane forces of creation. These dynamics are also God's power. But when we, however, become subject to them, that's when we distance ourselves from spirituality, from divinity, from God. We do not perceive the divine intent, nor do we sense the illuminating beauty of God's presence. Our minds become closed, and our hearts are blocked. He says we seek instead to be on the level described in the Torah. You are children, atem banim laHashem leElokeichem. You are children of God, in Deuteronomy 14:1. Whenever we do God's work, we do it not only as an obedient subject of the king, but as a child who loves one's parents. And it brings closeness, whether we are learning, whether we are praying, whether we're performing a mitzvah. We deep inside want to feel that we're growing close and closer to God, our spiritual parent. And we can feel ourselves growing closer to God, enjoying God's radiance, sensing God's presence. But not only, the Pious Etzner teaches, when we pray and do mitzvot and learn. If we focus on holiness with clarity and strength for each and every moment, we can gradually take control of our sense perceptions. We can actually see the presence of God. Each of us can see with our own eyes that we do stand in a spiritual, visceral, personal paradise, a Gan Eden. And he concludes and says, this is the goal of our group, is to help each one of us and then our friends and loved ones also be able to travel to this beautiful place. So I see that the P.S. Etzner views the struggle between Yaakov, between Esav and Yaakov, in terms of consciousness. The lower consciousness, where one may be subject to the physical demands in the world, within the limitations of the five senses, leaving very little chance to really sense the presence of the divine. And then the higher consciousness, where one's mind does not become closed and one's heart does not become blocked, where instead of being subject to the natural forces in the physical world, one actually senses the divine presence in them. And by stating that this is not only when we pray and practice mitzvot, but when we gradually take control of our sense perceptions, we can actually become aware of the presence of God at all times. This is yet another understanding of the verse of the elder serving the younger, the Rav Yavod Tzair. So in conclusion, I would like to suggest that what we've seen from three phenomenal sources of inspiration, three great luminaries, spiritual luminaries that help us really, really move to a deeper place within ourselves and touch that divine within ourselves, we see three different approaches to this conflict. What looks like three different approaches. The Baal HaTanya defines it as two nefashot, two souls. Rav Kook defines this as two different worlds. We're living in two different worlds, two olamot. The Pious Etzner describes this as living with two different types of consciousness. All three begin in what seems as a dualistic approach, which is really the first part of this pasuk, because the word two nations that shall separate are very much in force. And then these three luminaries teach that, in fact, the two may be integrated. Really, we don't live in a dualistic world. We live in what could be a united world, in one world. And this is the end of the pasuk. May we all be blessed to sense the struggle between the souls, between the worlds we live in, between the types of consciousness that we may experience. And may we be blessed to embrace the struggle with softness, with gentleness. May we honor the struggle. And then may we gently bring peaceful resolution. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Yiska. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.